Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to what is another episode of the AI Business Podcast. I'm Ben Wodecki, and I'm really pleased to be joined by Luca Zinkovic-Fries from King, who's the VP and head of AI at King, I should say. Luca, how's it going?
Great, and thanks, Ben, for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. So as many of our listeners know, I'm the gaming guy on AI Business. Some of you who may not know King, King is a mobile game developer. They make things like Candy Crush, which I'm sure we've all played, among a host of other games. Luca, talk to me a bit about how AI fits into mobile gaming and how it actually differs from, say, traditional console and PC gaming.
So I would say traditional console and PC gaming is a lot about creating an immersive environment, telling a story, essentially more related to traditional types of entertainment like movies or reading a book and so on. Mobile gaming is quite different. Our players play in short bursts to de-stress. It's not so much about showing them some fantastic new immersive environment, but more about making the game work for them and their needs. And what we've seen previously is that mobile gaming was a big revolution when it moved from being on social media, moving from Facebook to mobile. And the reason for that was simple, because it was more of an adjustment to the player's needs, the player's wants. What AI allows us to do that is take the next step, basically personalize it more, adjust it to exactly what an individual player wants rather than to a group of players and so on.
So Luca, where does AI fit in with what you're doing? What kind of deployments have you applied it to, use cases? And also, can you talk us through any examples of where maybe it's not quite gone as well as you thought it would?
Yeah, of course. So it's a very broad usage. So I started at King a year ago and heading the AML department, which was founded then. And we have about 300 use cases that we're working on, and it's across all of King. So it touches everything from level tweaking, level generation, to personalizing offers to the player, to essentially trying to do better in reaching out with communication, with visual arts and things like that. So it's very broad, ranging from the just purely commercial to the very gameplay related. And that's half of the story when it comes to AI gaming. The other half is basically where it's not really specific to us, but to the industry as a whole, and not just to the industry as a whole, but to the world as a whole. So the massive productivity increase and fantastic new creative opportunities that are there now with the AI that has exploded in the past 6 months, sort of GPT-4, Midjourney, things like that. In terms of specific projects, I think one fun thing is right now, I got an update yesterday, we're running about 180 million predictions per day through the ML platform. So it's quite large volumes. Usually, sort of the challenge has been not so much in getting a good model that sort of predicts player behavior or that comes up with a good suggestion. The challenge has been like, what do you do with it? Even if you sort of, if you take, for instance, a recommender system that recommends power-ups in the game. Even if you build one that players tend to use twice as much as they do with the previous methods, like what do you do with it? How do you integrate with it? How does it play with the other game mechanics and so on? So there is a lot more complexity than just the machine learning model, so to speak.
So like you said, you joined 2022, and that was via an acquisition. You were previously at Polterion, I believe that was.
Correct.
Talk us through how you've seen AI change at King in that time, because obviously you came in and then 12 months later, the generative explosion has occurred. You know, as an outsider in, how have you kind of seen it shape and shift, I should say?
So King has always been very data driven. Like 10 years ago when Candy Crush was launched, it was very much based around data, around A/B tests and so on. There's been a data-driven culture, and there was an ML team in place that was doing a lot of great stuff. Now, what the Paltarian acquisition meant for King was a massive boost in terms of number of people and an addition to the technology. And then 6 months into that, we had a generative explosion, which was really something unexpected. I mean, I've been working for AI for 25 years, and generative models per se are nothing new. Large language models are also nothing new, but just at the speed that that has developed in the past 6 months has been remarkable. And that sort of makes you rethink things from scratch, because completely new opportunities open up. Like, for instance, a typical approach, if we talk about personalization, a typical classical approach would to have a central system that tries to learn player behavior and then adjust the game according to the individual. But what if we don't do that? What we instead of doing a central system, what if each player has their own AI buddy who learns how they prefer to play, what they're playing, and so on? And that AI in turn talks to a AI that's expert at levels, and they communicate. So, my player likes this, and this. Oh, then perhaps this level would be great, and so on. So there's a ton of new possibilities opening up there in terms of game design and so on.
I was kind of looking at this from a user perspective, because procedural generation, which for those not in the know, is the concept of, you know, mathematically generating things. So it's kind of been around for, I'd say, mid-2010s. You know, you had No Man's Sky 2016 in gaming. That was kind of sparked this procedural generation interest, right? So it kind of has that kind of crossover. Where do you see the kind of generative AI? You mentioned it a little bit there, but do you see that kind of procedural crossover with gen here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the difference is in the algorithms behind it. Basically, the traditional type of pre-neural network generative models are mathematical models, and basically where you have a known equation that you iterate on, and it can create textures, it can create levels, or whatever you sort of optimize it for. The cool thing with the AI bit is that it's really good at imitating human style of doing things like writing, doing levels, and so on. So it offers up a much higher quality from a human point of view, at least, results that typically the players like much better than something that's coded by a limited algorithm. I mean, it has applications just about everywhere, from, if we're talking about assets in the game, to complete generation of levels and even code and so on. In our case, we've been working with level generation, in particular level tweaking, and helping the level designers based on essentially a playtesting bot, reinforcement learning base, that can very quickly play through levels and variations of levels and say, like, okay, this seems to be the right difficulty, what's needed for this player group at this stage, essentially, that kind of thing.
So let's talk about a little bit about that level generation, because it's kind of interesting given, you know, Candy Crush, right? So ridiculous number of levels. I think I've lost count. I think I'm surprised if you guys haven't as well. And talk a little bit about how that works. Are you feeding a system kind of existing levels and assets and seeing how it works? Talk us through, explain it to me as if I clearly have no idea what you guys are doing and how you're approaching this.
Generative stuff is done. We have over 12,000 levels in Candy Crush, so we have tons of data, and also tons of data on how literally billions of people have billion number of games that have gone through it, and that can be used to train a model that then comes up with suggestions for a new type of level. And you can condition the model, saying, like, okay, this is for this type of player. Well, there is a very big difference if you are working on a level early on or at the end of content, sort of. And I should clarify that it's not just that we're doing levels at the end, adding levels, but we are constantly improving all levels across the game. So if you played Candy a few years ago and played level, I don't know, 50, if you played it again today, it won't be the same level. So it will have gone through a lot of modifications and improvements and so on. So you constantly iterate on it. But anyway, so the generative model can come up with a suggestion of like, okay, here's one suggestion. And then we have level designers who look through and critique it and can say, yeah, this seems to work, but it should be improved in this and this way. And then it sort of does a new iteration on that. And that's the basic process. So the level designers are still very important in terms of quality control, but this gives them an opportunity of really producing, doing many more levels than they could have otherwise. And it's been a bottleneck.
So kind of that human collaboration that, you know, we're increasingly seeing in the enterprise, that's really fascinating. One thing, Luke, I'd like to talk to you about as well is overall game design. Because as a gamer, I've always been an AI kind of writer. I've always been kind of concerned or kind of apprehensive about the idea of kind of generating assets. So like, build me a bench, generate an asset, because, you know, to me, I love the process in which it takes the developer game, but obviously you need thousands of man hours, thousands of developers and coders to build, you know, big end games. How much of a boon is this actually for designers, you know, like King, like others, that actually you can help those overworked staff peoples to create concepts and themes and overall assets in games?
So I think it will be a massive thing. All of the sort of internal tests and things that we've done shows that designers, once they use the technology, become very positive towards it. Although there is initially fear about it, of replacing tasks and work and so on. But generally, when they see that, okay, this can help visualize things quicker, they can come up with drafts, it can even come up with fairly good end results. But it's still in the very much, you still have to specify the creative vision. And that's not always something you can easily do just in words. So yes, so even if you like Midjourney or something like that can produce a very good looking image, it may not be exactly the image that you want. But we are, this is more in a sort of research and experimental stage, as it's also the legal situation is very unclear. And there's still work to be done. We'll see now. Photoshop has its part of like standard now in their latest release. So I'm guessing that will lead to a very broad adoption.
It's interesting you brought up the kind of legal aspect on the early days, because that's been the big thing, you know, using kind of copyrighted materials to train works, things like that. That's a big thing right now. And I guess in the gaming space, you know, you have a lot of assets out there that you could use potentially to train. But I guess for you guys internally, it's a little bit safer, I can imagine, using your own assets and stuff. What kind of conversations have you had internally around this? Is it something that you're looking forward to in the next 12 months? What can you kind of talk us through?
So, I mean, we have the AI Labs team looking at that and the creative teams on Candy. But it's still, the legal situation is not so much right now about the use of copyrighted material. But as you say, we have plenty of assets of our own. It's more about the copyrightability of AI outputted images that is unclear. I personally, I see that it can only come to one thing in the end, that it will be allowed, because it's such a massive, massive productivity boost for so many. But still, it's a very much gray area right now. So we are treading very cautiously in that particular part.
So I'm keen to understand where AI fits into mobile gaming over the next kind of 12 months. Because obviously, like you said, still early days fairly, but then, you know, the potential for this to kind of accelerate what you guys are doing and is enormous. Can you talk us through kind of what you envision the next 12 months to be like here?
So there are, again, two components. One is productivity increases, and one of them is code assistance. That is just such a huge time saver. But then the other one is just general cognitive acceleration. So if you're working in an organization and you have running projects and things like that, just getting a co-pilot there to help you structure your thoughts, structure stuff, and so on. So that's sort of on the productivity side. And that we're really doing a lot now and trying to get that going as fast as possible. Then on the actual game side, on the product, the two really, let's call it three big areas. One is personalization. And it's essentially, you know, when you play Candy Crush or Soda or one of our other games, typically the sort of core game experience is one part of it. But you have various events, you have competitions, you have mini games, you have a lot of stuff going around. And users have very different preferences there. We know that, and what AI allows us to do is really to tailor that to the user's preferences. So that's one part. The other part is automation. Right now we're basing most of our stuff on A/B tests, and we're running up hundreds of them at any single time. And that gets very complex. Sort of it's hard to know exactly what is causing what, and it's hard to coordinate decisions around it. And especially with sort of increased complexity in every dimension, it just gets more difficult to do. And they're getting AI to help out for making decisions, essentially, rather than humans trying to analyze a lot of contradictory results from A/B tests and trying to make a guess. And the third one is content generation. We know that it's a bottleneck that we've always had, building high quality levels. It's even if we do have a lot of people working on that, it's still sort of what's players want more, essentially. And it's typically those that are at end of content players who are the biggest fans of the franchise. And of course, we would like to deliver it.
So Luca, finally, 12 months you've come in. My final question to you is, how easy has it been to convince the kind of seniors at King that this is the way to go forward in terms of embracing AI? Has it been an easy battle? And has it been, King has been doing a lot in terms of innovation for a long while. How has it been for you since you've come in the 12 months as well?
There has been no battle, because the decision to go strategic on AI was why they did the acquisition. So I think it's been much easier, much, much easier than I could have possibly imagined, for a couple of reasons. First, the number of use cases, there are just so many. And unlike most other companies that we worked with Piltarion, King actually has its data in order and has data. And then also that there was that this was a leadership initiative. So there was full support, both in King and also in from ABK, Activision Blizzard King, the parent company. So this was a bet that was made. And then, of course, it was a very good cultural fit, and we were very, very welcomed in the company. So it's been a year now, like a week ago, it was a year. And I, having known a lot of founders who've gone through acquisitions and so on, this went so much, much better than I could have possibly expected. So it's been a good year.
That's fantastic. I'll be honest, it's incredible that you've come in that year and everything has exploded. And I think the most important takeaway for me is I actually want to play some of these refined levels that I haven't probably played in a long time. And I'm hoping some of our listeners do too. Luca, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ben. Thanks for having me.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.